came to the forefront yesterday. I don't know if anybody was paying attention to the news while you're here at the APHA, but yesterday the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal both published an article. And New York Times had actually made, look, the front page above the fold. So this is big time, right? If you're a front page above the fold, this is a real story going on. It says, rise in deaths for U.S. whites in middle age. And it goes on to say, poor education seen as a determining factor. Really highlighting equity and how important the social determinants are for health and how equity can impact health. I'm going to go a little bit into, this is really a basic talk, so I'm glad to be up front. In our five-year grant, we hadn't really studied health equity that much at the Center for Health Policy. We studied health and the impact on overall health, but not really health equity. So starting off, we learned a lot about different measures of health equity that I'm going to try to tell you a little bit about and some of the pitfalls and problems that we've encountered or seen as potential issues with these measures. Go over some measures and then a little bit about comparing equity measures over time and between groups and how we've managed to do it. So here's that article, actually. Isn't this beautiful, eh? On the rise, death rates have been climbing for middle-aged white Americans, which experts attribute to drug abuse, alcoholism, and suicide. Not great news. You don't need a picture of it. It's on the web. It's you can see this at the Wall Street Journal or the New York Times. These figures are there. So bad news if you're a U.S. white male in middle age. I'm not sure if we have any here. We've got, I see one right there. He's the director, yeah. I'm Canadian, so I'm way down here. So I plan on living a lot longer than you, sir. That's my plan. Thank you. So, you know, bad news, and it looks like, you know, this drug and alcohol overdoses, suicide, chronic liver disease is probably related to alcohol as well. So not good news. You'll also notice they included U.S. Hispanics in here, and they're doing well. You know, they're right there with Canada and the U.K. What you don't see on this slide is African Americans, actually. They don't make the slide because they'd be somewhere up here still. They're actually getting better. It's declining for them as well. It's just that they don't fit on the scale, so they didn't include them. Really sad state of affairs. So the mortality rate for whites 45 to 54 old with no more than a high school education has increased by 134 deaths, and that is a lot. And the last time an increase like that really was seen, I think that this is what the researcher said, was with HIV and AIDS. So something weird is going on. Anyway, so now that I've told you a little bit about what's going on yesterday, I'll start with some of these measures. So some of the measures are really all about money. And the notion of health inequity starts with economic inequity. And economists have been measuring inequity or inequality for a long time, so they've got some knowledge in the area. So we're going to start with measuring economic inequity with something called the Lorenz curve. Who's heard of the Lorenz curve? So we've got a couple of hands up. The Lorenz curve is a great illustrative way to demonstrate or to give people a notion of how inequitable income is. So what you do is really basic. You rank everybody from 1 to N on how much money they make. You count how much money each person has. You figure out how much money there is in the total population. You calculate the proportion that each person has. You add that up from 1 to N and you graph it. Now that's not very clear, but I'll give you a picture. If everybody made the exact same amount of money, you could just randomly rank people. You wouldn't need to rank from one to end. You could just randomly distribute people. And if you could account for 10% of the people, you should account for 10% of the income. And so you'd see a line something like this in the bottom corner. You've got 10% of the people, 10% of the income. If you had 20% of the people, you now would have accounted for 20% of the income. And on until eventually you get to the top corner, you've accounted for 100% of the people, you now have accounted for 100% of the income. That's the line of equity or equality. We've now accounted for everybody. If everybody made the exact same amount of money, we'd get this nice diagonal line. That's not the way it works in reality, of course. You might see something a little bit more like this. This is a situation where you've got a lot of income inequality. And it happens out there in the world that you have situations where most of the money is concentrated amongst the very rich. Right? You've only accounted for about 18% of the income at 60% of the population. You get to that last little chunk of the population and they've got all the money. You could try to make things better, move it a little bit in. This is a better picture, and if you want to be able to actually talk about what that line means, there's a measure called the Gini coefficient. Has anybody heard of the Gini coefficient? A few more hands, maybe? The Gini coefficient is just a way to quantify the difference between your Lorenz curve and your line of equity. It is, in fact, the area under the line of equity that is above the curve. So that area is your Gini coefficient. You'll see this measure tossed around by economists all the time to talk about inequity or inequality. If we add a little bit better, it is, in this case, it's actually 0.56. This is a bad situation to be in. It's not great. You can make it a little bit better. You'd have 0.44. You can make it a little bit better. You'd have 0.34. If you're wondering why I'm throwing these numbers at you, it's because if you look at the world, this is about where the world sits in terms of the best to the worst in terms of equality or income equality. So you've got the United States there. They're at about a 0.4, somewhere between 0.4 and 0.45. They're right up there with Russia and China. You've got your Europe, which is lower, tends to be. Canada's in there with them, Australia. Then you've got South America and Sub-Saharan Africa is where there really is a lot of income inequality. One of the things about the Gini coefficient and the Lorenz curve is that it's very relative, right? Everybody could be poor and you'd have great equity. Or everybody can be rich and you'd have great equity. So you really have to take a look at, you know, what is the absolute income as well, because I'm pretty sure that places like Uzbekistan, and I can't remember what country this is, it's not that everybody's rich. It's that there's no really rich people, perhaps, or there's not enough really rich people to make it look more like Russia. So there's a little bit about the Gini coefficient and Lorenz curve, and that's about economic inequality, and that's where we can start to think about health inequality. And you'll see why in a second. So we've got we can also start to measure income inequality and talk about progressivity. We'll talk about. So there's a guy named Kakwani. He thought, hey, you know what? We can talk about progressivity of a nation, making the world a better place. How you would do that is you would actually compare a Lorenz curve to another Lorenz curve. And his idea was to compare the pre-tax Lorenz curve to the after-tax Lorenz curve. And so, in a progressive nation, you might expect that the Lorenz curve would move. That you would tax the rich more than the poor, and that would change the distribution, and you'd get a more progressive place. If we were doing that in this situation, you'd actually calculate, and this is so easy, just the difference between the two Gini coefficients. What you're actually doing is calculating the area between the two Lorenz curves. Really straightforward stuff. It's called the Kakwani Progressivity Index. If you had these two Ginis of 0.56 and 0.34, you'd get a Kakwani progressivity index of 0.22. For health inequity or inequality, we kind of work from the same basis. You rank everybody based on income from 1 to n. So you keep the same ranking. Everybody's ranked on income. But now, instead of counting money, you start counting your health outcome. What proportion of the health outcome is happening in different income brackets? And so that's how we do it. We actually divide our population up into deciles, count the proportion of the outcome in each decile, and then you can graph that just as you would the Lorenz curve. And so I say here, I actually group people into bins. We try not to count health outcomes by individuals just because, well, first of all, we're already calculating rates, and second of all, it's a binary outcome. It's not the same as income, so there's other issues with it. We tend to work with income quintiles. Deciles are actually better. It's better to divide people into deciles. You get a closer approximation, really close approximation to the true number. In the nomenclature, though, if you're making a Lorenz curve for income and now you start counting a health outcome, they call it the concentration curve. This is something we learned. We tried to call it a Lorenz curve, and we had the economists look at us and say, that's not a Lorenz curve. What are you talking about? That's a concentration curve. So that was great to learn. The Gini coefficient becomes something known as the concentration index. And just be careful, if you're trying to publish a concentration index, don't call it the CI. Turns out most people think that's a confidence interval, so I don't know what you want to call it. We just wrote it out every time because the first review didn't like CI for concentration index. If you want to measure change over time, it's just a modified KPI. So when we're talking about comparing a Lorenz curve to a concentration curve or two Lorenz curves for this Kakwani Progressivity Index, Now what you can do is you can compare your Lorenz curve, which is your income inequality, to the concentration curve, which is your health inequality, and see what kind of, hopefully you hope the concentration curve is less than the Lorenz curve, and you can see what kind of impact policy has on negating the effects or mitigating the effects of income inequality. So that's called the modified KPI. So you can't call it the KPI anymore, you have to call it the modified KPI, keep that in mind. So really it's about measuring this area under the line of equity and using different ways to calculate differences or changes over time. You could look at two Lorenz curves over time and do the same thing. Now how do you do a p-value on this? That's the next question we face. Well, we've just got a number here, it's just a line, it's just an area, how do we get to some kind of test for this? And it turns out the way to do this is bootstrapping, so hopefully you're all familiar with bootstrapping. If you aren't, get familiar with bootstrapping, because as far as I can tell, there's no other way to test this. So we've actually gone and we use 500 iterations. Some people might use fewer, some people might use more. So that's how we've managed to do it. Now there are some weird things that happen when you start measuring health inequity. Some things happen a lot. And when we're talking about binary outcomes, so either it happened or it didn't, that actually does something to the concentration curve. It creates a situation where the maximum concentration curve value is quite a bit lower than 1. It cannot possibly be 1. So in this case, we've got the concentration curve for breastfeeding initiation in an urban area in Manitoba, and it looks like, hey, we've got perfect equity here. You'd think that, except that the base rate of breastfeeding initiation is actually 75%. So now what that means is that the concentration curve cannot move towards that lower right corner. It's not possible because you can't actually have one woman breastfeed all the children. You could have one person make all the money, but you can't have one woman breastfeed all the children. At least we haven't figured out how to do that yet, and I hope we never do. So the actual maximum value for the concentration index, so if all the breastfeeding was happening all at the rich and none of the poor people breastfed at all, then it would be 0.25. So the actual maximum value corresponds very well to the base rate of the outcome. So there are modifications, there are corrections proposed. Wagstaff said, take into account the base rate of the outcome, and so you might say, okay, well, it's 0.044, the maximum is 0.25, so we're going to change it, we're going to call it 0.2. instead of 0.044. It's about 0.044 divided by 0.25. The problem with those corrections, of course, is it makes it appear like there's more inequity than there is in reality. So we get to what happens with most equity measures. At some point, there's a value judgment made about the outcome and its relationship to inequality. And there is a lot of value judgments made in this kind of research. Some things happen more amongst low income than high income, and so you don't see that curve go below the line. So here's the concentration and Lorenz curve for teen birth in Manitoba. And you can see that, you know, most teen births are among the low income families. So you're accounting for 75% when you've only accounted for about 20% of the population. So that's a little bit, or 20% of the income, sorry, 35% of the population only has 20% of the income, 75% of the births. It's really easy to take care of this. So when you're talking about concentration indices, you just take the absolute deviation from the line of equity. So if you just take that deviation from the line of equity, you've got your Gini is 0.23, your concentration index is actually 0.51. So when I talked about progressivity and having a concentration index less than the Gini, this is the opposite situation. You might say maybe it's a bit regressive, and certainly we need to try to engage in policies and interventions that might change that inequity. And this is where measuring changes in equity gets a little bit tricky too. One way to solve this would be to just have a lot more higher income women get pregnant. That would solve the equity issue, and this is why I say there are value judgments in here. There are other ways to assess inequity, and they're probably used more often than coming from the economics route. There's an absolute index of inequality, there's a relative index of inequality. These are really basic measures that most people are probably familiar with. So the relative index of inequality is just a relative rate. So if you're familiar with calculating a relative rate or relative risk, there's your relative index of inequality. The absolute index is the difference. So rather than a relative rate, it's the difference between two rates. Typically, you see one of two methods for it. It's either the 20-20, which is comparing the top quintile to the bottom quintile. There's also the 40-10, which is the Palmer ratio, and so that's the bottom 40% compared to the top 10%. That came out of South America. I think Palmer is Argentinian, I think. So you could look that up. I'm sure it's on Google somewhere. And that had a lot to do with the concentration of wealth and in several nations anyway. And using the bottom 40% gives you a better picture of what's going on. And including that extra 10% of the top actually really changes the measure you'd see at that top end. So if we were doing it for teenage pregnancy here across income quintile that's at the bottom here, if you were doing your relative rate, and this is a change over time or pre-post, so at the beginning it was 5.18 and at the end it was 2.91. So we've got first your relative index of inequality at your first time point is 5.18, your relative index of inequality at the second time point, 2.91. You could run this as a time by group interaction, or difference in difference, as some people call that, and you could see whether or not these two numbers are different. And you can see here equity's gotten better because of both effects, right? We have fewer pregnancies amongst the poor and more amongst the rich, so hey, there we go. We've got both going on. If we were doing the absolute index of inequality, it would be about the differences. So at the start, the difference was 60, and at the end, it was 40. And you can do, again, a test to see whether or not those two are different. Hello.
Sorry,
I see a hand up. I can take questions at the end, or we can take them.
Okay, sorry, wasn't here today.
Sorry about that. We've got lots of time because as of now, there's only two presenters. So we could be here for a while. So just to get back to that picture I showed you at the beginning from the New York Times and the Wall, I think actually this was taken from the Wall Street Journal. Yeah, it does say Wall Street Journal. By the way, I have no idea if in U.S. copyright laws this is permissible. Hopefully, I'll be back in Canada before anybody knows this. So we see this, right? We've got this U.S. middle-aged men. Their rate has actually been going up, although it's not much different than 1990. It was still declining, and then for some reason, around 2000, it just decided to stop declining and started going up. And they really wanted to tell this story because it's very odd, right? It's been declining for everybody else. But equity has actually been getting better, and that's because there's a narrowing gap in the life expectancy between blacks and whites. Yeah, it's due to the rising death rate amongst whites. Now, this is not a good way to increase equity or equality. But you could see if we could just get more middle-aged white men to die, we could almost reach the rate of black males who, again, are somewhere up around 580, I think it is, on this graph. We're up at 450 here. If we could get up to 580, you'd be at the death rate amongst black males. They had to take it off. I'm sure they took it off the graph because it just ruins the story, right? I mean, their line for males would be down here and it'd just be a mess. Both stories are actually quite important. That is a really weird thing happening with middle-aged males in the U.S. So just to give you a little bit of a warning about relative and absolute measures, if we saw these rates here, we'd say, hey, life is getting better, whatever we're doing, it's good. Right? This is good. If we started to calculate our equity measures, you might get a slightly different picture. So if we decided to look at the relative risk of disease over time between rich and poor, we'd say, oh, you know what? Things are getting worse. Equity is getting way worse, right? We started at a ratio of 1.6, and now our relative index of inequality is 4. That's not good news. But this is the data behind it. Everybody's getting better, but they're all getting better at the same rate. You'd hope, if everything was perfect with equity, that maybe the rate for low SES would decline at a steeper rate than it is for the high SES group. If we were looking at the absolute index of inequality, it would just appear steady. Nothing's changed, we haven't done anything. And you wouldn't see that, in fact, the rates have been dropping for everybody, and something really good is going on. So just to keep that in mind, when you're displaying the relative index inequality or the absolute index of inequality, you have to go back to those real rates that you're looking at the beginning to get a good idea of what's actually happening here. So yes, be careful with relative measures. They're only intuitive if a reference group doesn't change over time. Then everything converges. Your relative index makes sense, your absolute index makes sense, everything gives you the same picture. If the reference group you're talking about is also changing over time, then you really need to think carefully about what you're looking at. And just to give you an idea of an intervention that was examined quite a while ago, but I thought I'd throw it up here just because it's pretty dramatic. This is mammography rates in Manitoba, and we have a universal healthcare system, so anybody who qualifies can get one if you're between the ages of 50 and 70. Notice how in Canada we eliminated that 40 to 50 age group, which if you look at the evidence, you don't need standard screening on. They instituted a provincial program in the early 90s, and what we actually saw was we had, you know, it wasn't so bad in terms of equity. Then we had this real change where the inequity really increased between urban and rural areas, and that's because the mammography program was placed in the cities. And then, a little bit later, so here's our intervention created inequity, and that's something to always watch out for. Interventions don't always decrease inequity, sometimes they actually create inequity. And then they created mobile mammography units. On a trailer, they could take it out to the rural communities, and lo and behold, by the end, we had created equity amongst all the regions of Manitoba. Still not at 100%, but I guess you just can't get everyone to pay attention. So health equity, again, an important aspect of today's research on health interventions. We all want to think about equity when we're thinking about the impact of interventions. Most of the measures are pretty intuitive and easy to communicate, I think. Whether or not people really understand them becomes a little bit of an issue. Hopefully, with graphics and pictures, they can get the picture. Be careful and know the limitations of the measures that you use, because we have discovered that there's issues with all of them. And I'm going to finish there. And if you wanted to know the results of any of this research, you would have had to have been at my presentation on Monday. So sorry about that. Thanks. So questions? There was
so just
one.
Just to recap for people that came late, Dr. Zhang and Dr. Mentes will not be here this morning, and that's why Dr. Chateau went on a little bit longer. So we'll take a couple of...
They're way too long.
That's fine. So if there are any burning questions, we'll take a couple now and let Rebecca speak. Go ahead.
My name is Rebecca, too. So
okay.
I don't know if this is burning, but it's something that kind of aided me a little bit when you were showing the two charts. But your first one, and this is me admitting my ignorance to how data, you know, how data is collected and what data is collected in Canada. But the first chart you showed talked about teen birth. The next chart you showed talked about pregnancy. So I'm wondering if the teen birth and in my daily work, I think very hard about how to present data so it doesn't seem judgy or blamey. And so just my question is for all the women, particularly the white women, do you collect pregnancy data, fetal loss, and abortion rates, and include that in that book?
So I can address that. I know a little bit about the data. So it's really all administrative data, so it comes from the physician visit and hospital discharge abstracts. Sometimes we're more concerned with teen birth, sometimes we're more concerned with teen pregnancy. So the pregnancies we miss are where there's been no visit to a physician and it resulted in a spontaneous abortion that wasn't reported to the medical system. So every visit to a doctor is recorded, and every hospitalization is recorded in Canada and at the population level. So we link it all together with some other data, and we're able to capture most pregnancies, almost all pregnancies. We do miss some, though. Any other questions?
No?
It does.
It does? It does a little bit, yeah. So I just wanted to make sure that the women were being looked at on equitable ground in terms of how you're talking about it.
Yeah.
And the pregnancy and the birth and the birth rates or numbers are not.
Yeah, so if you went to a physician or you went to the hospital, it's recorded, and we actually don't know the race of individuals either. So that's something that's not on our health records. The only thing we do know is whether or not you're First Nations, because that's actually funded separately, and so there is an identifier for First Nations, and that is certainly a group that's at risk in Canada. And so when we talk about health equity, and if race comes up as an issue at all, it's about First Nations, because that's where the real issues are in Canada, much like Australia, actually. So we have a lot of connections across the ocean. Another question?
Yeah, I want to get involved in the way you relate the teen growth with equity, because I think it's much more related to cultural. For example, in some area, even very poetry, but there's not the teen, there is the teen creativity or teen growth issue. For example, if we know before in China, almost no such problem, but now because of the open event,
it's a good point, the cultural issue. Some outcomes, there's definitely a cultural impact on how it's viewed. I think from all of our other research on the impacts of teen birth, there's a lot of negative outcomes for the children and the mothers going on in their lives. So these records that I'm talking about go back to 1970. So if you've stayed in Manitoba, we've got your entire life history for medical contacts going back quite a ways. And occasionally, you know, if you starting in 1996, we can connect it to your high school grades too, which is interesting. First Nations, there are communities where teen births and pregnancy is not something to be concerned about. So there is a cultural, nobody is, you know, bothered by the fact that you're going to have a child or in your teenage years, and as a peer group, it's not discouraged. So there is that issue. It's something that if you want to impact those rates, you'd have to come up with an intervention that's actually going to change that culture to discourage teen birth, because there's still a lot of negative outcomes. Just, you know, culturally it's acceptable, but it doesn't change the fact that there's a lot of negative outcomes associated with it. Thanks. Another one. We've got only two presenters, so we've got five more minutes. Most health, yeah. Yeah, the only, so with administrative data, right? So these are contacts with the system. So the physician records are, they bill the province, a single payer, and so what we get is tariffs for all of their procedures, and then ICD diagnoses. And in the hospital, it's again hospital procedures and ICD diagnoses. So it would be difficult to come up with a way of ranking an outcome, because all we ever get is a zero or one. Is it there or is it not there? We could look at costs, though, as a continuous measure, and that is something that we're exploring. So you could, now you've got something that isn't dichotomous, it is a continuous measure, and you can start to look at the distribution of costs. So for all disposition tariffs, we know the dollar amount associated with it. For hospitalizations, we have a case weighting system, depending on the diagnoses and the length of stay, that we can cost out a stay. We also have every drug dispensation in the province to anybody that's filled the drugs, so we can look at drug costs as well. So that is something that we're thinking about. Haven't yet, because that's a much bigger project. Nope.
Yeah, I had a question about the kind of disease, the logical order in which you would go from measurement of inequality at the individual level, looking at differences in, say, at the absolute or relative scale, and then you go all the way to doing the Lorentz curves of concentration index, which seem to me at least more of aggregate
population level.
Population level indices that really do not have the counterpart.
Yeah, and so that's kind of why it was divided into the two pieces, right? So it started with these measures that are really population level measures. And so if you have policies or interventions that are meant to impact your population, then you should probably be looking at some of those population level measures. If you've got a much smaller study or intervention that's aimed at impacting a particular group, then you'd probably switch over to the absolute index of inequality or relative index of inequality. So one of the projects we've actually looked at is an early psychosis intervention program. And psychosis is a pretty rare diagnosis, so it doesn't happen a lot. And so in those analyses, we didn't look at a concentration index or Lorenz curve or anything. We concentrated on the other measures that are more applicable at the individual level. And ones you'd calculate with a regression equation, right? Whether it be, I don't know, you could use a negative binomial if you were summarizing your groups at all, or you could look at a logistic regression and the odds ratios, or an additive model, so you could go either way.
That was exactly my point. So your baseline would be calculating the individual level of inequality, and then if you have a well-defined like, geographic locale or two groups that you're comparing that are large enough, perhaps some geographic localization, then you would calculate the work.
Yeah, the concentration.
And related to that point is the increasing realization in epidemiology that we really should be more concerned with absolute difference rather than relative difference. A lot of people now are calling for considering the extra case
slope between groups, between the haves and have-nots. Yeah. Rather than just a simple... Yeah, the noses through the door is a pretty important thing for policymakers, right? We can talk about relative rates and odds ratios and that sort of thing, but when it comes down to it, it's how many people are going to show up. So the absolute difference... This is something that in pharmacoepidemiology, there's more of a tradition or history, at least, a little bit anyway, of looking at both multiplicative and additive models. And so the multiplicative models are the ones that look at rig ratios or odds ratios. The additive models take a look at absolute differences, either in risk or probabilities. When you're implementing that, you just change the distribution link, right? Instead of a logit link, you say, hey, this is the identity link. The issues you come in with, whether you're using Stata or SAS or SPSS, is whether or not those models always converge. And the problem is if it starts predicting values less than zero, the model says, no, that's not going to work for me. So it has to be an outcome that isn't too rare or with predictors that are going to predict probabilities less than zero or greater than one, because it just can't handle that.
I'll take one more question.
First of all, Dr. Sanchez, thank you. I think you explained the Lorenz curve of the coefficient excellently.
Well, thanks.
Very, very easy to understand. And so my question kind of follows up. Instead of using the typical statistical model or programs that we use, what about using like a gross curve and philosophy like that? That'd be which
phenomenon? Yeah. So that could work. So you're thinking about almost like a GEE sort of thing, or yeah, so generalized estimating equations for changes over time. Yeah, that could work as well. And so we've actually used those because when we study population change over time, we realize we're studying the same population again and again. It's not the same individuals, but it's the same population. So let's say you're examining rates amongst 0 to 5 year old children, and you're measuring it 1 year and the next year and the next year and the next year. It's not the same individuals, but it is the same population. And so you expect an autocorrelation there, right? Their outcomes are going to be correlated if you're comparing across age groups. So we've actually used generalized estimating equations. You could also go multi-level modeling as well, if you want to get into that. Or we're in Chicago, so we'll call it hierarchical linear modeling, right? Because I think Rodenbrick and Bush. That's their names. Or is it Brick? He says Brick, right? Bryk, it's Brick, yeah. So Scientific Software International, if anybody's interested in looking into HLM modeling, they're right here in Chicago. So if you're in Chicago as well, maybe you can bump into them. And if anybody wants this copy of the New York Times, they can have it.